It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
We just learned about this explosion at a FedEx facility. Like you said, it's about 60 miles from where we are standing right now in an area called Schertz. We just have new video into the newsroom. Let's show it to you right now. Here is what we know. A package containing nails and shrapnel blew up on a conveyor belt around 12:30 this morning, and a woman was treated for a concussion. No word yet on any connection to the Austin bombings, but the FBI is investigating. We, of course, we'll bring you the latest on that explosion as we know it.
That was Todd Pirro of Fox News this morning. Another bombing in Austin, at least outside of Austin. Just amazing. Todd has more detail. I want you to hear it. Here it is.
Where we are standing right now, neighbors say this is the exact location where that tripwire bomb went off on Sunday. You can see a little bit of a divot here in the grass behind me, as well as some blood, an eerie reminder of the fear that is gripping this community. Take a look at this. This is the morning edition of the Austin American Statesman. We are going to stop it. That is the vow from law enforcement, who said yesterday two things. One, that this individual, they believe, is a serial bomber. And two, that he's raised his game to a whole new level.
Well, he and his friend were riding a bicycle about a block from their house. It was so dark they couldn't tell, and they tripped and set off this explosion. Didn't see it. It was a wire. And it blew up.
That's the grandfather of one of the latest victims who, like I said, set off a tripwire on Sunday night. The AP reporting that that blast left what appeared to be nails stuck into his leg. This fourth blast, which injured two men in their 20s, follows three package bombs at homes around the Austin area this month, which killed two and injured two others. Authorities, including more than 300 FBI agents on scene, warned that the sophisticated tripwire is, quote, a significant change in the bomber's techniques, and they are hoping the bomber makes contact with them so they can, in their words, understand his message. Meantime, the Austin Police Department is asking people to not let their guard down, warning in a tweet, if you come across anything that looks suspicious, do not touch, handle, or disturb it. Keep a safe distance and call 911 immediately. And Steve Ainslie, Brian, right now authorities say they don't have a motive, and really nothing is off the table at this point.
All right, that again was Todd Pirro this morning on Fox. That's the news this morning from Austin, or the Austin area. I think, the many groups are still saying it has to be racism, but the latest two victims were white males. And then, of course, this package at the FedEx office was just random. So it's really hard to say. I think police are thinking that this is really a serial killer who actually has great sophistication in bomb making, and that's what's really worrying them. And of course, they're not sure, as you heard in the report, if this latest package that blew up at the FedEx building is related to the others. But it seems like pretty obvious that common sense to most of us, but it has to be researched that there is going to be a link, or it could be a copycat. I recognize that, but it has taken on a new turn. And so people in Texas right now, at that area of Texas, are nervous about this, and for good reason. This is what happens when the crazies, are unleashed. This is what happens when wickedness gets so bold, because it is, isn't it? Wickedness has really gotten bold. It makes me think of Romans 1 in so many ways, that lies, sexual deviance, murder, all of that is praised, and sort of like in a strange way, these mass murderers to some parts of the population are heroes. It's really strange. These are odd times we live in. All the more important for us to draw a line in the sand and talk about truth, because the God that we serve is the God of all truth. And Jesus himself said, those that want to know the truth or have a heart for the truth, listen to me. And so we're going to draw that line. And there are a lot of things happening today. Speaking of that line, there is a primary in the state of Illinois today. Perhaps you hadn't thought too much about it. Illinois is a very blue state, no question about it. But there is a big race there that I want to make you aware of. It's pretty interesting. Actually, I think I'll let Mike Tobin kind of lay the groundwork, and then I'll add a few things. Mike Tobin from Fox News.
Last election, State Representative Jeannie Ives supported the campaign of wealthy political newcomer Republican Bruce Rauner for governor. Now she's his opponent in what has become a toxic primary.
He betrayed everything that he said he was going to do. And then on top of that, he betrayed our values.
Rauner's first term angered staunch conservatives. He lost a two-year budget standoff to the Democratic majority led by the powerful and entrenched Speaker of the House, Mike Madigan. Rauner's promise for tax cuts became a tax hike. He signed a bill expanding abortion coverage through Medicaid, signed the Trust Act, which prevents detention of illegal immigrants. Ives generated attention with a controversial ad. Actors played illegal aliens, extreme feminists, and transgenders thanking Rauner for his policies.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Disregarding that Ives is one of the most conservative figures in the state house, Rauner's response was an ad linking Ives to the union-backed speaker.
Jeannie Ives might just be Mike Madigan's favorite Republican.
Nothing can be further from the truth, but you see, Governor Rauner has millions of dollars to lie about me, and he knows I don't have millions of dollars to counterattack.
However, enjoying a 20-point lead in the most recent poll, Governor Rauner prefers to ignore Ives and focus his attention, as well as his money, on the general election. If he gets there, he will likely face an heir to the Hyatt Hotel's fortune, Democrat J.B. Pritzker.
We're very focused on beating Pritzker and Madigan. We believe that Pritzker was likely to be the nominee because that's what Madigan wants.
Now, Rauner promises to roll back the tax hike. In the final days before the primary, he vetoed a gun control bill.
It was redundant regulations. It was going to just create red tape on small shop owners. It wasn't going to really keep our community safer.
Ives seems to take moves from the Trump playbook. For instance, she doubled down when confronted about her controversial ad. Much like the president, she is counting on motivating frustrated voters who, to this point, have not shown up in the polling.
Okay, so for those of you in Illinois or in surrounding states, this is the primary today in the governor's race. And I want to explain a little bit. Who is Bruce Rauner? Well, he is a wealthy businessman. His wife is an abortion activist, which was a tremendous concern for the conservatives in the state. And there are some, trust me, it's my home state. But Rauner promised them that he would be pro-life, that he would vote pro-life, that he would support pro-life decisions. And then he completely reversed and did the opposite and made his state also, worked with sanctuary policies, advanced transgender rights. It's just really been very hard on conservatives in the state of Illinois who reluctantly supported him because based on his promises, which he subsequently broke. Almost all the way down the line. Jeannie Ives is a state rep who was a graduate of West Point. She served in the Army. She was an ROTC instructor. She has children. She actually, just because we know and I know, she's a Christian. She made this ad that Mike Tobin referred to. Talk about gutsy. These are actors in this ad, and I want you to hear they are playing different roles. One's playing a transgender woman. One's playing an illegal immigrant, and one's playing a woman who just got an abortion. And I want you to hear the ad. Here it is, Jeannie Ives' ad for the governorship of Illinois.
Stay tuned for a special message.
We want to say thank you.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner.
Thank you for signing legislation that lets me use the girls' bathroom.
Thank you for making all Illinois families pay for my abortions.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner, for opposing law enforcement and making Illinois a sanctuary state for illegal immigrant criminals.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner, for the taxpayer bailout of Exelon, with the largest electricity rate hike in U.S. history.
Thank you for making the rest of Illinois bail out Chicago teacher pensions, and for giving Rahm everything he wanted, and more.
Thank you, Bruce Rauner, for not being in charge, leaving Mike Madigan in charge.
I am not in charge. I'm trying to get to be in charge.
Thank you for being the worst Republican governor in the country.
Rauner caved on all 44 points he promised in the campaign. Even the call for a tax cut became a state record for a tax increase.
Thank you for betraying Illinois Republicans.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So now here's the update. Jeannie Ives is only, what I'm hearing, only 6 points behind in polls on this day of the primary in Illinois. So conservatives actually have a chance. They have a shot in spite of Rauner's millions at hiring, at electing Jeannie Ives. So we'll see what happens. For those of you in Illinois, you'll want to make sure that you get to the polls today because you have a chance to actually do something in your state. You haven't had that, you know, you haven't had that opportunity in a very long time. So there you go. That's what's happening. There's something else happening that I want you to know about. It's in the Supreme Court. Alliance Defending Freedom, which is now led by Michael Ferris, is in the court defending. Actually, they're bringing a lawsuit against the state of California, and it is the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates versus Becerra. That's, of course, the I think it's the Attorney General of the state of California. Basically, what they were doing is they passed a law in the state of California to force these pregnancy centers, pregnancy centers, to post posters in their facility advertising abortion and giving numbers where girls can get abortions. And so the National Institute of Family and Life Advocates decided to sue because it's First Amendment rights. They should not be like if you were forced to put up, you know, something in your office that you didn't believe. You were supposed to advertise for something that was repulsive to you, immoral to you. That's what they're asking these pregnancy centers to do. And by the way, it's interesting because pro-life pregnancy centers outnumber abortion facilities nationally by 5-1. So all eyes are on the Supreme Court today as arguments begin. Americans United for Life is signing on, of course, to that brief and many others. And people will be looking to see what the Supreme Court does, or at least how the discussions, though. They won't make a decision today. You know, we won't know till June, but we will hear the oral arguments, and it should be interesting. By the way, Mississippi, just yesterday, the Governor Bryant signed the toughest abortion ban in the United States. It's a ban on abortions after 15 weeks. There's only one abortion clinic in the state of Mississippi. It has already sued. Governor Phil Bryant signed it just yesterday, and right immediately, the Jackson Women's Health Organization filed a lawsuit. The law's only exception on abortion are if a baby, they say fetus in this article I'm reading, but I think baby, unborn baby, has health problems, making it incompatible with life outside of the womb at full term, or if a pregnant woman's life or a major bodily function is threatened by pregnancy. It does not cover pregnancies resulting from rape and incest. So that's what's happened in the state of Mississippi, and that's a very big deal, as, let's see, Joe Biden would say. Only he'd say it in a much more crass way. All right. The omnibus, we talked about it yesterday. Jim Jordan will be joining us, Congressman Jim Jordan, on Thursday to talk about this. The deadline is Friday. It is a nightmare bill. That's all I can say. In fact, let me just read this statement from Heritage Foundation. The omnibus spending package that Congress plans to introduce this evening is a complete betrayal. Congress has repeatedly promised to fix the spending problem in Washington, but this bill promises trillion-dollar deficits as far as the eye can see. Worse yet, this omnibus completely abandons any attempt to repeal or roll back Obamacare. Instead, a Republican-controlled Congress now appears that it will entrench and expand Obamacare by giving billions in bailouts to insurance companies, as well as additional funding for outreach and enrollment to prop up this failed law. And I also would include, it continues full funding for Planned Parenthood. It fails to put conscience protections for healthcare providers in the bill. Heritage says congressional leadership should take the remaining time to correct this disastrous piece of legislation before it is voted on by the House. This is putting conservatives in the House in a real bind because Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell are working with Democrats and the left to pass this nightmare piece of legislation. You need to call them today and tell them no on this omnibus bill. We're hoping the president will veto it, but we don't know that. So stay tuned. Coming up next, though, another odd appointment that you're going to want to hear about. Pretty controversial. Sandy Rios in the morning.
Hi, this is Jim Stanley, and we're partnering with the Ministry of Preborn to help save babies' lives through ultrasound. Here's how a nurse describes the power of an ultrasound.
last week, just one example of a mom who came in, was very abortion-minded, and when she saw the picture of her baby on ultrasound and heard that beating heart, it was a defining moment that just broke her, and she said, I just can't allow this baby to be killed.
By letting a mother hear her baby's heartbeat and see her baby in the womb, she will choose life 80% of the time.
I cannot tell you how many times a baby's life is saved through ultrasound. It's just an incredible tool.
Underwrite a free ultrasound and help save a baby's life. Go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say keyword baby. All gifts are tax deductible. Your love can save a life.
The only answer to racism. This is Ken Ham, president of Answers in Genesis, Ark Encounter, and Creation Museum. We hear a lot these days about racial tensions and acts of racism in America. How should the church approach this issue? Well, let's see what the Bible says. Genesis makes it clear we're all descended from Adam and Eve. We're one blood, as the book of Acts puts it. That means we're all one biological race. It also means we've all inherited Adam's sin nature. That's why we all sin and we'll all die. But the good news is that Jesus Christ, the God-man, stepped into history as Adam's descendant, our relative. He took our penalty of death for us so we could be forgiven and have eternal life. So every human has the same problem, sin, and the same solution, Jesus Christ.
Discover more about the Bible's answer to racism at AnswersRadio.com. You'll find biblical answers to the issues of our day when you visit us at AnswersRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
Hey, my name is Aaron Abbs. I am an undecided major, and I'm a freshman here at TMU. And as soon as I came here, I fell in love with the campus. Like, I knew, like, God was calling me to be here at TMU. And, you know, I couldn't get a better education than this. Like, professors who pray before class, who care about your spiritual walk with Christ, you are who you are, and they care about you.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Jim Carrey of Dumb and Dumber fame is catching some heat over an unflattering portrait of Sarah Sanders, the White House press secretary. Called her a liar, a so-called Christian, monstrous. It really was over the top. Ranks right up there with Rosie O'Donnell's anti-Christian screed against Speaker Paul Ryan, condemning him and his beliefs to eternal damnation. And most recently, Joy Behar suggested people who hear the voice of God and talk to Jesus are mentally insane. She apologized only after tens of thousands of viewers complained. It won't be the last time Hollywood or the mainstream media smears people of faith, but I do take issue with Jim Carrey's description of Sarah Sanders. She is not a monster. As a matter of fact, there's nothing more lovely than a person of deep and abiding faith in God. As the Bible reminds us, how beautiful are the feet of those who bring good news. I'm Todd Starnes.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Whether you are a dealer or doctor or trafficker or a manufacturer, if you break the law and illegally peddle these deadly poisons, we will find you, we will arrest you, and we will hold you accountable. We have to get tough on those people. And that toughness includes the death penalty. Some of these drug dealers will kill thousands of people during their lifetime, and they'll get caught, and they'll get 30 days in jail. Or they'll go away for a year, or they'll be fined. And yet, if you kill one person, you get the death penalty, or you go to jail for life. We are just doing the wrong thing. We have got to get tough. This isn't about nice anymore.
Well, that was a shortened clip of President Trump talking yesterday, Manchester, New Hampshire, about the opioid epidemic. And of course, he's taking a tough line on this. He's saying that drug dealers, not just drug dealers, but distributors, there should be a death penalty. They're causing death. There should be a death penalty. The tough talk, of course, that we hear from the president is music to many people's ears, including mine. We understand that law and order must be reinstated. And so that's good news. But of course, when it gets comes time to being tough, it relates to other things, too, that we see are not working out so well. And I want to bring one of them to your attention this morning. There's a nominee that is imminently going to be voted on that has been controversial since President Barack Obama nominated her. She couldn't even get through the Senate. It had to be a recess appointment. This was back in 2010. And now she's back in the lineup again, appointed by President Trump. And we have to talk about this. I've asked Paul Marengoff to join me. Paul is an attorney. He is the founder of Powerline Blog. He's been a real powerhouse in Washington, writing on all of these issues. And he's been certainly writing on the nomination of Paul, I never know how to pronounce that. Heifelblum.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you. Good for me. All right, so Heifelblum has been renominated to be on the EEOC Commission. Now, you know, Paul, that doesn't mean a thing to people listening. What is the EEOC Commission?
Well, it stands for Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, and it's the federal agency that enforces the anti-discrimination laws, laws that protect African Americans from discrimination, laws that, if properly enforced, will protect Christians from discrimination based on religion, and it protects gender discrimination, which has always been thought to be discrimination against a man or a woman based on their gender.
And Paul, you know, it's not, that sounds good. You know, let's see, you know, anybody can say anything about what their organization's mission is, but actually the EEOC has become very powerful. And that part is hard to understand too. How is it that they have so much power?
Well, they exercise their power the way other agencies do in this era of the administration's administrative state. They take laws that are well-intended and if enforced properly, good laws, and stretch their meaning beyond recognition. And they come up with guidelines and interpretive documents that stretch the law beyond recognition, and then they rely on it. They try to coerce employers to complying with these interpretations. And if that doesn't work, they go to the courts and hope that liberal judges will do their work for them.
And it's my understanding, Paul, that this is a five-person commission, and there's supposed to be, I guess, three Republicans and two Democrats under a Republican administration. Is that is that supposed to be what's happening?
Yes. When it's fully staffed, there would be three Republicans and two Democrats, as there were three Democrats and two Republicans under President Obama.
But we, you know, nothing's fully staffed now, and this is another example. Now, Heifelblum already serves on this. There's only one Republican, as I understand it, and how many, I don't really know. Who else is on there besides those two?
Yeah, right now it's 2-1 Democrats, with Heifelblum being one of the Democrat appointees.
Okay, and of course, when I talk about this stuff, I really don't like to make it. I'm giving those terms Republican and Democrat for descriptive purposes, but the real heart of this is has nothing to do with party. It has to do with philosophy. And so, Paul, the history, I remember covering Heifelblum when I was president of Concerned Women for America back in 2001. Her name came up because she was so radical. But you know her story, so tell us, why is there so much objection to this nomination?
Well, because she's the architect of President Obama's radical gay, lesbian, trans, et cetera, agenda. She's the one who decided somehow that Title VII, the anti-discrimination law, protects people based on sexual preference, which is not what the law says. And she was the one who pushed it to apply to transgender, to push it into the bathroom, so that under her view, it's now sex discrimination. For example, for the Army to deny a male soldier access to the female restroom and shower facilities, that was her baby. She came up with that interpretation. And it's been one leftist, you know, agenda item after another under her. And she's, you know, extremely effective. She's a talented, smart woman. I've met her. She's very able, and she's been able to push through the power of her will and help from the courts push the law into directions that it ought not to go, that impinge on religious liberty and all sorts of other freedoms.
You know, let me give a specific case that I just read about. I don't know if this is Powerline or not. Honestly, there's no credit on this, so if you wrote this, let me know. The report is that she cast the deciding vote in a case where the EEOC decided that the Department of Army discriminated against Todd Lusardi when it denied him equal access to female restroom facilities. Feldblum and two other commissioners.
That's the case I was talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, I wrote about that. Others have, too. Ed Whalen has written a lot about that over at National Review.
And so,
it's a ridiculous case, a ridiculous theory.
Because Todd Lusardi, who became Tamara, was not even complaining about it. They sort of used him as their template, as I understand it. And then they lost that case. I mean, then he was still a man in terms of biology, and they forced the Army to allow him to use restrooms and changing facilities with women, right?
That's it. And he didn't, like you say, he didn't even ask for the shower. I think all he asked for was the bathroom, but Feldblum generously offered him the lady showers, too.
Yeah. And it isn't just the other radical thing she did, this is the one I think I remember going way back with. She signed on to a petition which was promoting polygamy, polyamory.
Absolutely.
All kinds of matches, all kinds of hookups, you know. Talking about redefining the family, that's when I first remember Hi Feldblum.
Your memory is good. She did that. She's tried to walk it back since then, but she signed a petition. I mean, it's as simple as that.
All right, but it isn't just, as though that weren't enough, it isn't just the restrooms, the biology, transgender, so-called rights. It's also religious freedom, Paul. Let's talk about that part of her record.
Yes, well, she said in a famous interview, she said that when religious liberty and sexual liberty conflict, I am having a problem coming up with any case in which religious liberty should win. In almost all cases, sexual liberty should win, because that's the only way that the dignity of gay people can be affirmed in any realistic manner. And she's pushed that, and that's not just no longer just a statement that she gave in an interview. The EEOC recently won a case in the Sixth Circuit out in the Midwest, where the owner of a funeral home could not enforce a dress code requiring male employees to dress in a suit, because the director, who was male, was transitioning, quote unquote, into female, and he wanted to dress like a woman at people's funeral services. I mean, imagine, you know, you're a Christian or a Jew or any person with traditional values, and your mother passed away, and you're having this funeral, and all your family and friends are coming, and here's this funeral director who's a man who's dressed as a woman. I think if Hi Feldblum wants to talk about dignity, I think the dignity of that service and its whole purpose would be thrown into a tizzy.
Well, so my understanding correctly that her position prevailed in that case, that the funeral, the judge decided against the owner of the funeral home?
Yeah, the district court judge found in favor, but then a left-wing panel of the Court of Appeals, which is its next highest court, right below the Supreme Court, ruled unanimously that the man could dress like a woman, and overturned the district court decision and found in favor of the EEOC.
Okay, so we need to sort of get this in perspective, because President Trump, for whatever reason, has renominated her. And the problem is, of course, the board does not have a full set of members. And she, because of her, she's powerful, as you have described, Paul. She knows what she's doing. She's a powerful force. She's been serving on that for a long time. And so this is the future for people of conscience on these issues. Remember that she said, I'm having a hard time coming up with any case in which religious liberty should win. And yet the President Trump and his administration has reappointed her. That's a mystery to us, Paul. Why would they do that?
I'm not 100% sure, but I believe, first of all, it was part of a deal to get two Republicans on so that there'd be a 3-2 majority, which would be good. I believe, and this is kind of third hand, I believe that one of the Republicans who would come on is the wife of someone pretty high up in the legal department over there at the White House. But I also think this wasn't really Trump's decision, obviously. I don't think he focused on it at all. But there's this sense among conservatives that backwater agencies like the EEOC don't matter that much. And so, but the Democrats view them as their home turf, and they understand the importance of them and their ability to leverage themselves into people's lives to the detriment of Christians, for example. So we just weren't paying, I just don't think we were paying quite enough attention. And they tried to slip it through in a midnight deal. Fortunately, you know, people of conscience, conservatives, religious people got wind of it and blocked it back in December. This was going to sail through while Trump nominees for key positions are languishing for months and going on a year without getting confirmed. This one was going to slip through as some sort of a backroom deal. Senator Mike Lee put a stop to it for the time being. But I just don't think we pay enough attention to realize the importance of these seemingly low-level agencies that are part of the administrative state that can so profoundly affect people's lives.
Now, let me just interject. There is something practical people listening can do. The American Family Association has a petition asking President Trump to withdraw the nomination. And we have 75,000 names on the petition already. And if you would like to add your name, go to our Facebook page, and we're going to post the link. You can also go to afa.net, afaaction.net, and I think you'll find the petition on there, too. But we need to get as many names on this petition as we can, because my understanding, Paul, is that they have, what do they call this? The inside, they've put a, what do they call the
hotlining.
Senate thing on? Yes, they've hotlined. That means they're planning on voting on her imminently. Isn't that right?
Yeah, they hotlined it in December, which means that they're going to do it unanimous consent. That it sails, someone has to stand up and object to it. It means that basically the majority, Mitch McConnell, is on board, and someone, it can only be stopped if someone, you know, puts a, what they call a hold on it. And my understanding is that Senator Mike Lee did that, which took it off the hotline. But it's still pending, and they're just, you know, and from what I'm hearing, it's just a matter of next week, next month, they're gonna make another run at it.
And if she gets on this thing again, my understanding is she's going to serve until 2023, which has, we can only imagine what kinds of radical, we can't really. I can't even imagine that it could get worse, but of course it can. There are always more ways to be, I'll call it deviant, that's my words, 2023. This is really important. And so we would ask you to join us in signing the signature. Go to Facebook. Our Facebook page, Sandy Rios in the Morning, and please sign that petition or go to, I think you'll have to go through our Facebook page, but just in case you don't do Facebook, go to afa.net and check to see if the petition's there. I'm pretty sure it is. And you know, the irony of this, Paul, is as you and I both know, President Trump's serious nominees cannot get even a vote in the Senate. There was some story yesterday about Senator Lankford wanting to speed up the nominations process and this whole article about how he's doing all these things to make that happen. But the truth is, they don't need to change any rules. They can get those nominees through. They could even gavel out the Senate and let the president do recess appointments. I'd love to know your thoughts. We just have a minute left. What's going on there?
Well, part of the problem is Senator Gardner from Colorado, who's a Republican, who's holding nominees as a hostage because he doesn't like what Jeff Sessions has done, on marijuana, which is basically Jeff Sessions hasn't done anything except say he's going to enforce the law. But no, it's not like people are being arrested in Colorado on federal drug charges. But Cory Gardner, for whatever reason, is helping the Democrats hold up all the Justice Department nominees. I'd like to see some pressure applied there. He did back off a little bit, but he's still holding some key nominees hostage.
Yes,
to make
and
sure
I have,
that he gets his way on marijuana, of all things.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. Some of the most important positions that the Justice Department held up in that way. But, of course, it's not just them. Mitch McConnell has to take some of the blame here, Paul. The Senate is only in session like 2.5 days a week. I heard that if we continue at this pace, it will take 11 years for President Trump's nominees to get through. And yet they eagerly want to, hurry through High Feldblum on this EEOC committee. It's just amazing. Paul Marengoff, Powerline Blog. Paul, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, Sandy, and thanks for the petition.
Oh, yes, sir. Our pleasure. All right, Sandy Rios in the Morning on AFR Talk.
I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works,
My soul knows it very well. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Corner. In an interview with the LA Times, Bill Nye explained what he believes is necessary in order for so-called climate science to advance to his liking. He believes older Americans must die before climate science is taken seriously. It's the logical outflow of an anti-Christ worldview that denies God. To him and those who think like him, nothing is sacred about life. Therefore, children, the elderly, and the infirm are all expendable.
Visit the Hamilton Corner on the podcast page at AFR.net for more from Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Join American Family Radio for In God We Trust, How Defending Christianity Helps Our Nation, a 30-minute radio special featuring author, speaker, and radio host Dr. Frank Turk.
We pulled out of society or didn't defend our beliefs, and society went godless, and we wonder why. When the rest of society went secular, we can see where we are now. It's really the church's fault.
Listen this Wednesday morning, 11 Central on American Family Radio.
This scroll is the title deed to this earth. And through the tribulation that is going to take place on this earth, Jesus Christ is going to once again gain control of the earth that belongs to him.
Join Dr. David Jeremiah for his series Escape the Coming Night, next time on Turning Point.
5:30 a.m. and 7 p.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hi, Janet Mefford here of Janet Mefford Live. I'm amazed at how God is using American Family Radio in the lives of our listeners.
I want to thank American Family Radio for keeping me abreast of the news from a Christian worldview, for their heart for the world, for the lost, for missions, for America, for the leaders, for Christians here and everywhere. I encourage everyone to give to AFR, and my heart is that I'll be able to give more and pray for more because you're doing an amazing job. Thank you so much. God bless every staff member for all that you do for us.
God is using American Family Radio to inform, equip, and activate our listeners to strengthen the moral foundations of American culture. Please partner with us in this important effort during our 3-day share-a-thon beginning Tuesday, April 17th.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. As Chinese President Xi Jinping completes his consolidation of power domestically and pursues with increasing brazenness the domination of half the world on a scale that makes Imperial Japan's Greater East Asia co-prosperity sphere pale by comparison, there's an urgent need for clarity about the threat posed to freedom by communist China. The retired Catholic Cardinal of Hong Kong, Joseph Zen, has just helpfully provided a reality check in the form of an assessment of the truth about the proverbial canaries in the coal mine, China's ever more repressed Christians. Cardinal Zen warned, quote, "The truth doesn't enjoy good health or high esteem nowadays in China. Everything is fake, from food to medicine. You're not expected to tell the truth, just say what the boss wants to hear," unquote. Here's the truth. Communist China is persecuting its own people and is at war with ours. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
They basically have said that McCabe leaked classified documents. That's illegal. But then he also lied about leaking classified documents. And so, you know, the FBI are sticklers on this, and they don't tolerate lying from their agents. And so if all of that's true, I see no way that he could continue in his office and that punishment is appropriate.
You know, his firing may be justified. There's no way for us to know at this point. But even though it may have been justified, it can also be tainted.
He had 21 years of exceptional service in the FBI. So it was clearly rushed. And I think there are questions about that and whether the administration was putting pressure on the Justice Department to take this action.
All right, that was an order of appearance. Senator Rand Paul, Congressman Adam Schiff, and Senator Angus King. on Andrew McCabe's firing. Interesting that Adam Schiff actually said he may be guilty. I was surprised he even said that. That's so unlike him. So we're going to be learning more about Andrew McCabe, former deputy director of the FBI, as things unfold. And I think there's going to be a great deal more to it than just the few things that you have heard. There's a great deal being made of President Trump's tweets. You know, he's been tweeting up a storm, as we should say, after this has happened, talking about Comey, talking about Mueller, talking about McCabe. And I have to say, yeah, if I were his advisor, I'd say maybe this is not the time because actually something is being done. But, you know, nevertheless, you have to understand the president has been under tremendous pressure. And as we understand it, Bob Mueller, in the pursuit of whatever, he reminds me of the who's the prosecutor in, oh, I shouldn't go down this path unless I have the names in front of me. Oh, that Phantom of the, I mean, no. Les Miserables. Who was the Jean something, whatever the prosecutor's name, who just never let up. That's what Mueller reminds me of, by the way. But he's going now into the Trump family finances. We're reading that Don Jr. and his wife are going through a divorce. You can imagine the turmoil in the personal life of the Trumps, although President Trump never really complains about that. He's usually positive. He gets mad, but he doesn't really whine or complain. And so, well, he points out what's going on, the unfairness of it. That's true. So you can call that complaining. But he's certainly not a whiner. And I think that's probably where this is coming from. Plus, he just hired Joe DiGenova as one of his attorneys. And trust me, Joe is a walking encyclopedia, as you know, you've heard him here, on what all the bad things happening at Justice and the FBI. So I'm really glad that Joe DiGenova is there with the president. And I expect that he's cluing the president in on things that he didn't even know. No wonder he's angry. If he knows, you know, half of what Joe knows, and I probably know a quarter of it, it's cause for anger. So I get a little annoyed when the focus starts going on President Trump's tweets, when really we should be talking about what Andrew McCabe actually did, Peter Strzok did. I told you, Peter Strzok was personal friends with the FISA court judge who found Michael Flynn guilty. And then was immediately recused from the case like 2 days after that. There's a lot of really bad stuff going on. And so I think the president is rightfully angry. He just doesn't, you know, he lets it fly. And so, but that's not the story. The story is the corruption of the FBI and the Justice Department and all the deep state players. John Brennan, oh my goodness. When we hear all that John Brennan has had his fingers in, it's going to, you know, your hair will blow back, I'm sure. So just stay tuned on that. Catherine Herridge had a good report last night on Fox and with more detail than I've given you. So let's listen to Catherine.
A source close to the fired FBI deputy director confirms he documented his conversations with President Trump, where he often raised McCabe's wife and her unsuccessful 2015 Virginia Senate race. Jill McCabe received more than $600,000 from Democrats, including then-Governor Terry McAuliffe, a longtime Clinton ally. The FBI said the campaign contributions were not a conflict because it was before McCabe took the helm of the Clinton email case. But critics say the contributions showed bad judgment, and McCabe's termination for cause undercuts his credibility.
I don't think it's any big deal. I'm sure that President Trump never said anything to Andrew McCabe that was illegal or implied any type of illegality. So he can keep all the memos he wants and turn them over.
President Trump, who praised McCabe's firing as a great day for the FBI, emphasized that he spent very little time with the FBI's former number two, insinuating McCabe drafted the memos to help his own agenda. One senior Republican called for public hearings to show whether McCabe's termination was suspect, coming 2 days before his government pension kicked in.
When it comes to this issue, we need as much transparency as possible to make sure it wasn't politically motivated.
You know, that's just silly. I have to say, the Office of Professional Responsibility, as I described in detail yesterday, my husband used to be part of that, is not going to come under political pressure to fire someone. It doesn't work that way. There are a lot of people involved, a lot of layers, a lot of investigation. It is a very long process, and that process of investigating Andrew McCabe has been underway for a long time. So, I want to just respond to just a little bit of what Catherine said there. You heard the FBI claim that Andrew McCabe, yes, he oversaw the Clinton email investigation, and his wife, you know, was paid nearly $700,000 by Terry McAuliffe, who was a fundraiser for the Clintons, their chief fundraiser, But as the governor of Virginia recruited Jill McCabe to run, gave the McCabe $700,000. Andrew McCabe was there in the meeting. The FBI's excuse why that is not a conflict, because then he is overseeing the Clinton email investigation, was that that happened later. I think it was just a few weeks later. So you think, like, they had this meeting with Terry McAuliffe and they got this money situation and they're all friendly and happy about that. And then he's assigned to Clinton's email and that makes it okay? Really? Okay, Catherine has more to her report. Let's listen.
Fox News has learned the FBI branch that investigates misconduct allegations began looking at McCabe as early as last summer. The grounds for termination go beyond media leaks. The inspector general concluded McCabe lacked candor on multiple occasions. FBI veterans who want the inspector general to make the evidence public as soon as possible say bureau rules on lying are strict.
Lack of candor potentially gets you fired. That expectation applies to the brand new FBI agent, and it should apply to the deputy director.
A senior House Democrat indicated McCabe's firing may be justified, but he remains concerned about a broader pattern. A half dozen of Director Comey's closest associates, including former General Counsel James Baker, Chief of Staff James Rybicki, Senior Agent Peter Strzok, lawyer Lisa Page, Media Chief Mike Corton, have retired, been fired, reassigned, or demoted.
Is this because they corroborate James Comey? That's a question we also have to answer.
In his statement, McCabe said Director Comey knew about his contact with the media, which observers said appears to conflict with the former director's testimony days before he got fired.
Have you ever authorized someone else at the FBI to be an anonymous source in news reports about the Trump investigation or the Clinton investigation?
No.
The inspector general's report could come at any time, but in recent weeks, two sources tell Fox News, new leads were pursued and new interviews conducted.
All right, Catherine, on the McCabe firing. And of course, I talked with you yesterday about the fact that when McCabe gave his final statement, he said he was only one of three that could authorize leaks or information going out to the press. And he said, I wasn't the only one that knew about that leak. And that implies that maybe his boss, Mr. Comey, knew. And you just heard that clip. I told you about it, but Catherine played it. It even had more impact, where Mr. Comey under oath said he never authorized such a thing. So many people are saying, you know, watch. Andrew McCabe is probably the kind of guy who will pull other people down with him. And if anyone could bring, you know, James Comey down, it would be McCabe, if anybody knows all the secrets and what actually happened in that office. And I don't know. He just seems to have that nature, doesn't he? Where he would sort of rat on people to save himself. I don't know. You know, I'm extrapolating. I'm giving an opinion because that's what I do every day. But I think you could probably look for that to happen. It's really interesting. It's very interesting. And the story, again, is the corruption in the FBI. It isn't the president's tweets. I was amazed last night when I was watching Fox how they spent all this time talking about that. Yeah, it's interesting, and he's angry, and he's saying a lot of things, and maybe he shouldn't, but really that does not have any effect on the story. And the story is the corruption and the breach of public trust. It's just amazing. And by the way, many people are looking back and pointing out rightfully that James Comey and Bob Mueller, as very close associates they were for years, handled cases in the past so poorly. I want to read to you, this is Real Clear Politics. This is the way I see this too, but I've not seen this in writing. In the wake of Donald Trump's firing of FBI Director James Comey, the Justice Department named Robert Mueller III as a special prosecutor to investigate possible Russian interference in the 2016 election. It was a decision greeted with a chorus of supportive croaking from inside official Washington, a.k.a. the swamp. If anyone can stay on course and not be deterred by the whims of politics, it's Bob Mueller, said former Missouri Senator and U.S. Attorney General John Ashcroft. A great choice, added John McCain. Somebody we all trust, echoed California Congressman Daryl Issa. Impeccable credentials, chimed in Representative Jason Chaffetz. Should be widely accepted. Democrats were even more extravagant. California Senator Dianne Feinstein said that no better person could have been named. Illinois Senator Dick Durbin tweeted, I have the highest regard for his integrity and intelligence. And all this was dutifully reported in the press, which gushed over Mueller just as effusively. Robert Mueller, the special counsel America needs, intoned the New York Times. Times columnist Nicholas Kristof, revealing a lack of self-awareness worthy of Trump himself, gleefully predicted disaster for the president, and on and on and on and on it goes. But when you look at the history and record of Robert Mueller and James Comey, it's really bad. I have to tell you, they both have a very bad history. I knew that at the time, maybe not all of these details, but I certainly knew it. Many of us knew it. And one of them that Real Clear Politics goes into in this article is that they brought an investigation into the behavior of a guy on this anthrax. The anthrax investigation went on for 10 years. They spent millions of dollars on it, and they totally bungled it. And that's not the only case. And you know what? I'm almost out of time here, so I'm going to ask that we put this article, at least the one from Real Clear Politics, When Comey and Mueller Bungled the Anthrax Case, Real Clear Politics, and you can read and share that, give you some background. I also want to mention in the few minutes that I have here, there's now a lot of dust up about the Cambridge Analytica, which was the social, the media, the digital side of the Trump campaign. Of course, Cambridge Analytica is based in England. They do a lot of things for a lot of people. And now people are coming out saying, I wish I had time to play the clip, that they used this data inappropriately, that they accessed Facebook inappropriately, like 50 million people, which I'm not going to argue that they didn't. I don't know. But the reporting is as though this is the first time that anyone has ever used information on Facebook in a campaign. And yet we know that Barack Obama used Catalyst LLC to help them. It was one of the most sophisticated electronic media operations anyone had ever seen. It was actually pretty creepy at the time. I will probably do a longer interview on this soon so that we can go into this at a better time. But let me just say, even with Obamacare, do you remember that when they hired all these navigators to sign people up? And when they had these navigators, they got all of this incredible information on them and they shared it. So this is not, this is not like the first time this has happened. It's if the Trump campaign accessed Facebook information, it's not the first time, trust me. And I want also to tell you that this is the ex-Obama campaign director. Let me read this to you from Independent Journal. A former Obama campaign official is claiming that Facebook knowingly allowed them to mine massive amounts of Facebook data, more than they would have allowed someone else to do because they were supportive of the campaign. In a Sunday tweet thread, Carol Davidson, former director of integration and media analytics for Obama for America, said that the 2012 campaign led Facebook to, quote, suck out the whole social graph, end quote, and target potential voters. They would then use the data to do things like append their email lists. When Facebook found out what they were doing, they were surprised, she said, but she also claimed they didn't stop them once they found out. They came into the office days following the election and were very candid that they allowed us to do things they wouldn't have allowed someone else to do because they were on our side. So as you hear these reports, just keep it in balance so that you know what the truth is. And the truth is that none of us are safe when we enter our information into the atmosphere. It's just not a safe place, and it hasn't been for a very long time. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.